Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This Thanksgiving will be very different for Americans with the surging number of COVID cases in the country. The idea of Thanksgiving, though, is a long ingrained tradition, both here in America and around the world. The holiday was only officially established, though, in 1941 by Congress and Franklin D. Roosevelt. The establishment of Thanksgiving by presidential proclamation goes back to Abraham Lincoln, and it was done at the urging of a New England writer and magazine editor named Sarah Josepha Hale. Hale had been petitioning presidents to make the last Thursday in November a national holiday for over 30 years when Lincoln finally signed a proclamation in 1863. The story of gratitude and the long story of a day of Thanksgiving is the subject of We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and a Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. While the subtitle could refer to today, it actually refers to that fall of 1863 when Lincoln took Mrs. Hale's suggestion to proclaim a day of Thanksgiving. My guest today is author and journalist Denise Kiernan. Her new book offers stories and tidbits surrounding the holiday. She's the author of the bestsellers The Last Castle, about the building of the Biltmore Estate, and The Girls of Atomic City, about the women who worked in the secret nuclear town of Oak Ridge, Tennessee during World War II. She'll be speaking about her book, We Gather Together, in a virtual Zoom event tonight at 7 with Magic City Books. And she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Denise Kiernan, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this new book, We Gather Together, it comes at a time when it's very difficult to gather together. What was the impetus for doing this book about the whole idea of gratitude, of Thanksgiving in its larger meaning?
One of the key people in this book is Sarah Josepha Hale and her role in the establishment of a National Day of Thanks in America. But I don't generally write biographies, so I knew I didn't want to do a book that was just about Hale and Hale's life. I'm often interested in the sort of the juxtaposition of events and the intersection of events and people as much as I am in the individual events and people themselves. So the concept of a National Day of Thanks being established in the middle of the Civil War, to me, that was a really interesting intersection of events and ideas. But it still didn't quite feel like there was enough there for me to want to do a book. And then I started thinking about thanks in general and gratitude. Gratitude is, you know, such a compelling human instinct, a global concept, a timeless concept. Giving thanks, and then started thinking about there's so much more, you know, there's so much research that's been done recently into the importance of, you know, to your mental health, physical health, emotional health, of having some sort of gratitude practice in your life. And I thought that's going to be the linchpin for me. That was the thing that I thought, you know what, I just really want to, in a sense, look at American culture through the lens of giving thanks. And so that's sort of how it all came together. But when I was conceiving the book and working on it, you know, the world was very different than it turned out to be in 2020. And it was very strange to be editing with my, you know, working with my editor on a book titled We Gather Together as the phrase social distancing was taking off. So that was very, very unique experience this time around.
Well, it's very interesting, your subtitle of the book, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, at a Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace, could be about today, but it was actually about 1863.
Exactly. I mean, it is, you know, and again, that the idea that, you know, there was going to be a day set aside to bring people together when the country was just, you know, was literally ripped apart. That to me was, you know, was very interesting. And I think that idea of trying to find common ground and trying to find things we can all be thankful for when we feel divided, I do think that's a concept that has some legs for sure.
As you mentioned, the concept of gratitude and the idea of celebrating the end of the days of plenty goes back as far as humans, every religion, every culture, though even the term Thanksgiving goes way, way back to, you know, Middle English. And you found examples of days of Thanksgiving way back, going back.
Oh, yes. Way, way, way back. There was, one in the a day of Thanksgiving proclaimed in the 1500s for England's defeat over the Spanish Armada. You know, one of the more interesting, I just thought it was, I don't know why it struck me as so funny. I was looking through John Adams' diary, and this is, this was during colonial times, and he wrote, Thanksgiving proclaimed for the repeal of the Stamp Act. There were all of these sorts of Thanksgivings. Might be more akin to, might be for a great harvest, or they might be out of reverence and set aside for fasting and prayer, or they were for military wins. And you would have these days proclaimed. And, the ones that took place in the fall as you get further into history, harvest festivals are another one of those things that go way, way back. And so you have a lot of these concepts kind of starting to conflate, sort of like becoming a combination of things. But that wasn't enough for Sarah Hale. She wanted one day. She needed a project.
Well, before we talk about Sarah Hale, I found it interesting, some of your research. We think of the shared meal between the Plymouth colony and the local indigenous populations as the first New World Thanksgiving. That's not true on several levels.
I want to be clear. I am not the first person to bring attention to that. We keep telling the same story to kids, and you can't give them kind of the full story of what was going on the continent when the newcomers arrived. And then it's not the sort of thing that you ever revisit when, in AP history in high school, they're not going to go back and talk about Thanksgiving again. So right. These myths, it just keeps, perpetuating and perpetuating. And yeah, there were, there was a Thanksgiving proclaimed in Virginia. There was, there were ones in La Florida, as Florida was called when the Spanish were running things there. The ones in Texas. I mean, there were lots of different ones all over the place. And, and there is, what's interesting is the meal between the Wampanoag Indians and the Pilgrims in 1621. There is no evidence that the Wampanoag were actually invited. There's no evidence that anyone proclaimed it a Thanksgiving, which was the custom. You would proclaim a Thanksgiving. But, on the other hand, like trying to say, this was the first one doesn't really, that's almost impossible to do too. And so I think it's interesting how stories perpetuate year after year. And it can be very difficult to contextualize things like the people who came to the continent of North America hundreds of years ago and everything that entailed. I mean, those are very difficult, trying discussions to try and contextualize for 7 and 8 year olds.
George Washington, in his first year as president, he created the first national proclamation of Thanksgiving, which would be done by many presidents. He did it on the last Thursday in November, but it was a very different day of Thanksgiving, a day of reflection and service, not necessarily feasting was the meaning of that particular Thanksgiving.
That's right. And Washington even wrote in his diary, and it's interesting to read these proclamations that the presidents would issue. And I quote a number of them in the book because I do find it just, I'm just so curious about what they chose to be thankful for, what they chose to focus on. And Washington that day, he went to church and then he went by the local jail and, gave some money to the folks in there so they could have extra, some extra food and a ration, some good rations of ale. And so it was a quieter event. And a lot of times Thanksgivings were for maybe reflection on one day, and then later in the weekend people would visit with friends and sit down and eat with friends and celebrate. But it was a changeable day depending on where you were in the country. But yes, Washington was the first president to proclaim a national day of thanks, and the fact that he proclaimed the last Thursday in November, I think, is why Hale was so fixated on that particular day as well.
Now, Sarah Josepha Hale had a very particular notion of what Thanksgiving was, and she actually wrote about it in a novel in 1827, in which she describes what really sounds pretty much like a Thanksgiving meal all the way up to the present day. What was her fixation on this day of Thanksgiving?
You know, this is one of those things where you can extrapolate from what she herself wrote in her magazine, what she wrote in her novel Northwood, where pretty much almost an entire chapter is dedicated to describing a Thanksgiving meal that her characters are involved in. It. It's one of those things, as a writer, you're reading this going, oh my God, my editor would never let me get away with all of this. They'd be like, cut this in half. So, you know, she talks about the stuffing and the basting and, you know, where to play, how to set the table and where to place the goose and the ducklings and pickles and chicken pies and all of these sorts of things. You know, she, you know, currant wine, all these things that some sound familiar and other things, you know, I didn't know plates of pickles were a big deal, you know, for Thanksgiving back then. I've never had plates of pickles in my in my Thanksgiving dinner. But a lot of the foods, you know, cranberries and pumpkins, especially cranberries, the indigenous peoples on this continent had long known that cranberries were excellent, fresh and dried. They were a great source of vitamin C. Because they have benzoic acid, which is a natural preservative, and they were very easily stored for long amounts of time without refrigeration. But of course, you know, that wasn't, you know, something that was available at the time. And, you know, the same with, it is the season of various squashes and gourds, including pumpkins, which also last a very long time without refrigeration. And, you know, fowl has, you know, chickens and turkeys and goose and ducks. That has a long tradition all over the world. Because of the history of those foods and their plentiful nature and readily stored nature in America, look very, very familiar to us when you read this description, this ongoing description she has in the book.
My guest today is Denise Kiernan, a journalist and author. She's the author of The Last Castle, about the building of George Vanderbilt's Biltmore, and The Girls of Atomic City, about the women who worked at Oak Ridge, Tennessee during World War II. Her latest book is titled We Gathered Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. And it's about one woman's campaign to make Thanksgiving a national holiday. And this became Sarah Josepha Hale's, I guess, idea fix, if you will. She started writing. Now, she was an editor. She was a very profound literary influence. She was one of the first people to review Edgar Allan Poe while he was at West Point, you know, some of his early poetry. She published all sorts of leading lights of the 19th century. And she had this idea, we needed to have a Thanksgiving holiday, a proclamation each year. And she was not shy about petitioning presidents to do exactly that.
She was not. And, you know, you mentioned Edgar Allan Poe, and that's one of my favorite little parts of the story. It was so interesting to me that this woman who, you know, didn't go to college, didn't have, you know, a traditional education, who just became so influential in the literary world. And, you know, when her magazine reviewed some of Poe's early work, she then gets a letter from her son who says, you know, I gave your review to my classmate, Edgar, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. And so, you know, that began a lifelong for Poe till the end of his life relationship, writer-editor relationship with Hale, which I just think was so interesting when you think of the times in which she lived, the opportunities she was denied, and, you know, her ability to be what we would call today an influencer, right? You know, people on Instagram and Twitter, and they're influencers. She was an influencer. And But she, you know, she liked drawing attention to people in need and projects that she thought were worthwhile. And one of those was her desire to codify Thanksgiving. It should be the same day every year, and everybody in the country should practice it on the same day. And she not only wrote about it in this book, she would write about it in her magazine, you know, from her edit, you know, in her editor's letter. She wrote governors. She wrote the heads of territories. She wrote, you know, five presidents in a row before one agreed, Lincoln, you know, to get on board with what she was suggesting. And, you know, one of the things that I think is so interesting about her was this just incredible tenacity. And, you know, it's because a lot of times she would write people and they wouldn't get back to her, or they wouldn't get on board. And but she never sort of focused on that. Every, you know, in her magazine, she would say, last year we have this many more states agree to celebrate Thanksgiving. She was always focused on what was going right for her. And she's doing all of this while she has, you know, she was a widowed mother with five kids, and she's running a magazine, and she's editing anthologies, and she's doing her own writing. I mean, seriously, I would just look at this woman and what she was doing and think, what have I been doing with all of my time? You know, I've really got to get on to something. So just, you know, to keep going when it didn't look like people were hearing what you had to say. Stuff like that always find inspiring, because, you know, we all need to do that sometimes.
Now, to clarify, Thanksgiving was celebrated pretty widely in the United States. It was just that every governor would set the own date. It could be the same month. It could be a different month. And it was sort of piecemeal throughout the country, correct?
Yes, it was. And it was definitely more popular in the Northeast, and people would refer to a Yankee Thanksgiving, you know, the idea of a Yankee Thanksgiving. But people were already starting to move throughout the country and out into the territories, and those sorts of traditions moved along with them. And then, of course, religious Thanksgivings were already established in other parts of the country. And it's interesting to go back and usually they were printed in the newspaper. So you could see, you know, a governor proclaiming Thanksgiving on a particular day throughout his state, or, you know, someone in a particular community or town or city. And yes, the fall Thanksgivings might be, you know, some of them were dependent on, you know, when harvest was going to be. And that's going to be different in New Hampshire than it is in New York or Connecticut or, you know,
or
Virginia,
Georgia,
or somewhere else.
Or Georgia.
So, you know, it really varied. And even though, you know, sometimes it would be around the same time in certain places, again, it was not this sort of codified, unified, you know, one day for everybody in the country kind of idea that she envisioned.
I love her single-mindedness when her novel Northwood is republished 25 years after it was first published. You know, that Thanksgiving scene has one of her characters say, you know, it is such a shame that we don't have a national holiday.
I know. It's like it wasn't enough to just republish the book and still have this giant section on Thanksgiving. She had to have her characters come out and say, this needs to be a holiday, you know, and lament that, as was the case, there were only two federal holidays at the time. There was Washington's birthday and there was Independence Day. And they said, you know, it should be, you know, it will be so wonderful, you know, when we actually are able to do that and come together, and, you know, what a great day that will be. And yeah, so she wasn't leaving well enough alone. She was like, I'm going to have my characters kind of, you know, say this a little more directly.
But in Abraham Lincoln, she found a president who had an open mind towards this.
She did. And she also very wisely, I think, when she wrote Lincoln, you know, pleading her case that we need to have a National Day of Thanks, she wrote William Seward as well, his Secretary of State and a very, you know, very close advisor. And Seward in his autobiography talks about approaching approaching Lincoln to say, you know, they say, because they're in the middle of it, you know, it's 1863, it's the middle of the Civil War, saying, you know, they say we're taking away, you know, states' rights. Well, here's another right, you know, we should take away. We can take away the right to declare Thanksgiving. And Seward had already started putting together some ideas of what the proclamation that Lincoln might, you know, put out into the world, how that might read. He and Lincoln, you know, they finished it up. And so it cracks me up that, like, after all of these years, the time between her writing Lincoln and Seward and Lincoln's proclamation coming out is a matter of weeks. And I just think to myself, like, after all of these years of trying and not getting exactly where she wanted to be, how surprised must she have been at the quick turnaround, you know, she finally got from Lincoln? And, you know, O2 have been able to be a fly on the wall when she got that letter.
Yeah. You know? And most presidents would, again, offer a proclamation. But it still took another 60, 70 years to actually get a national holiday put into place.
Exactly, to have a congressionally established holiday. And what's so interesting is, so she finally gets what she wants, right? I mean, Lincoln is on board. He issues a proclamation. He does so again in 1864. Then, you know, he doesn't make it till Thanksgiving of 1865 because he's assassinated. Jackson issues one, and she's still she keeps doing this, and she's writing in her magazine, all we need is a congressional act, you know, and then this will be a fixed holiday, because she knew that until that were the case, it would always be at the whim of a president to pick the day and for governors of states in the Union to follow suit. But yes, she did not live to see that happen. That did not happen until shortly after Pearl Harbor. So again, to me, just so interesting the juxtaposition of events that she gets Lincoln on board in the middle of the Civil War, and then it becomes, you know, a congressionally established holiday during World War II.
It's interesting. She lives to see the first Thanksgiving Day football game. To you know, be alive when the first Thanksgiving Day football game takes place. I think it was Yale and Princeton in 1876. But she doesn't live to see the holiday.
That's right. So I think she must have been gratified by the fact that from Lincoln forward, every year, the presidents were all on board. And the last one she wrote to was Rutherford B. Hayes. And so I'm sure that must have cheered her, but I think she would have liked to see that congressional act come to pass.
Little Oklahoma trivia in this book: you write, in 1882 and 1884, the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation here in Oklahoma, Dennis, at that point it was Indian Territory, Dennis Bushyhead, also issued a Thanksgiving proclamation.
He did, and he did again in 1884 and 1885, and then Joel B. Mays, who was the head of the Cherokee Nation after Bushyhead, also issued these proclamations. Usually, in 1884, for example, he, you know, was following after, you know, President Arthur's proclamation. So they would, you know, he would, you know, waited for Arthur's proclamation and then in accordance with that issued his own. And, you know, he used it as an opportunity. And a lot of presidents did this to draw attention, not just to everything for which they were going to be thankful, but things that were important issues to them. And, you know, he, in his proclamation in 1884, he talks about, you know, hopefully, you know, that his brothers will deal mercifully and kindly with the Cherokee people as they show magnanimity and justice. And, you know, speaking about lives and property, and of course, property was a very significant issue for the Cherokee Nation and other indigenous peoples in the United States as people began to push westward. So, yeah, it was, I had, I mean, a lot of the things that you come across in these books, you have no idea about them until you you find them. And because you go, you get talked about your books or whatever, and people will say, "I had no idea," and it's like, "Well, I had no idea either," you know, until I came across it. But I did think that was an interesting aspect of the book that I wasn't expecting to come across, really.
My guest today is Denise Kiernan. Her new book is titled We Gather Together. You also have a section on how Thanksgiving was observed in 1918, the year of the great influenza. It was probably a very difficult Thanksgiving, and in many cases, Thanksgiving was a spreading event.
Yes, it was. And it was so interesting to go back when we were, you know, going through the final, you know, proofing of the book and getting ready to head into production. It was a very different world we were in, or, you know, earlier this year. And the Spanish flu in 1918 had a tremendous impact on Thanksgiving. People really wanted to actually be able to physically come together, you know, that they were finally on the other side of the war, and you know, people wanted to be with their families and were tired of isolation and quarantine and all those things that we are incredibly familiar with now. But, you know, a lot of public functions were canceled, and they were encouraging people, you know, please just, you know, kind of hunker down and stay in. And there's one story I came across where, you know, one family meal resulted in 27 illnesses, one single family meal. And that got into the newspaper. So it was really interesting to go back and look at that part of the book through 2020 eyes, in a sense.
Your book talks about your own experiences living in Italy and standing in long lines with other expats looking for cranberries in Italy. How are you going to celebrate Thanksgiving this year?
I am going to do all the cooking I usually do, even though it's only going to be my husband and I eating it, and therefore I think eating it for probably a good 2 weeks. Personally, I am going to shift, you know, really kind of try and shift my intention toward those people I want to connect with who I can't often connect with, because when you have, I do a big Thanksgiving and I do stuff all weekend. When you are entertaining people in your home, there's a whole other level of attention that you have to pay to the event. And now I'm trying to focus on the fact that I'm going to be able to pay more attention to lots of people that I normally wouldn't be able to connect with over that holiday weekend, because I would have been so, you know, busy with whatever was going on, you know, with my physical guests. So now I'm going to, you know, focus on giving thanks for lots of people in my life, and, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, on the video calls and on the phone, and getting to connect in a very different yet hopefully, you know, equally significant way.
Denise Kiernan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Best-selling author and journalist Denise Kiernan speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her new book is titled We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and a Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. It's published by Dutton. She'll be speaking tonight in a virtual Zoom event tonight at 7 with Magic City Books. You can learn more at magiccitybooks.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.